So, hi everybody, I'm Lisa.
Hi Lisa.
To stand or not to stand? Preferences?
Good.
Whatever's good for you.
I'll probably roam. So I'm really, grateful to be here today. I love giving service, and I love sharing my story, because when I give service and share my story, one, it grounds me, and it reminds me of where I come from and where I could go back to. It reminds me that I am living the promises, which I was so happy that you read. And it just really also helps me be committed to my program, because I have to show up for others, and that's a big thing for me. So I'm going to pass around the infamous photos. Some of you have seen them, because I did just speak the other day, but since I have 45 minutes, I will tell my story. So I am 52 on January 4th. I'm in program for almost 3.5 years. I've been abstinent for a little over 3 years. I'm maintaining 100 pounds plus whatever, because I don't really know what my highest weight was. Weight loss for the last couple years. And I'm still trying to drift down my last bit of weight. After the first 100, I had hormonal. Since there's no men here, I won't torture them. I can torture you. But I had like some really major hormonal changes that kind of kicked in along with menopause. So it was kind of time to change my food plan to one that was going to keep me maintaining. And I was really great. I was physically comfortable. I was pre-diabetic. I wasn't anymore. And I got off blood pressure medication. So that was like a really great, that's my kind of quick down and dirty as to why I'm in front of you today. I started compulsively eating somewhere about the age of 1.5. And I found that in a letter that my mom had written to her sister when I was a baby. And I said, I couldn't believe I could track it back that far. And God bless my mother. She was a compulsive overeater, teaching me all the ways. Apparently I climbed up on a refrigerator to grab a can of my favorite stuff. So, my story is a story of a lot of loss. I have a huge amount of personal loss in my life that started from when I was 5, where I lost a sister. And the structure in my house was interesting. I am the oldest. My other brother, his birthday is in December of the same calendar year. So we are 11 months apart. Then my mom, crazy woman, had like another baby a year and a half. And then this other baby was like a little bit after that. So she already had 3 of us that are kind of really running around torturing her. There she was grieving for a baby that, by the way, back then in 1965 or 6, they didn't allow, they thought it would be better for her not to go to the wake or the funeral. So, I'm looking back on this life now, realizing where some of my issues are coming from. So when you see my pictures, you'll see I'm like happy till I'm about 13, and then I'm really not. And then on my 14th birthday, I'd already started to gain weight. I went from a size 6X to a 16. I don't believe there were any numbers in between those two, just the one that got added on to the 6X. And I got to shop at the Chabette store, because that's where every young girl wants to shop. And there was a special store, and it was called the Chabette store. And I think my sadness already started in that point, and I was already kind of somebody who was just always striving for attention and for something to hold on to. And my mom, God bless her soul, did the best she could do with where she was at, but she was a career woman, and that in a time when people weren't career people, women weren't in careers, and my mother was. I took over the house, basically. So I did the cooking, the cleaning, and what I thought was the child rearing. But, I have my own delusions. And my uncle was a priest, so I grew up in a very strong Catholic family. He died when I was he died on my 14th birthday in high school. And that's when I hit my highest weight, my first highest weight, which was 280 pounds, which was not a joy for somebody in high school to be 280 pounds. I don't know who shares that, but it isn't pretty. I've been barked at. I've been ignored. I've been laughed at. I've been all those things that that was all that I could see, because I couldn't see the fact that I still had friends and I still did fit in. I just found myself being very lonely, very miserable, and hanging out with anybody else who was at least my size or bigger. And basically we ate, we drank, and we ate and we drank and smoked pot. So welcome to my high school years. I don't know how I ever graduated. And when he died, again, it was the same thing where it wasn't my birthday anymore. It was when my uncle died. So there was a lot of drama around that. A lot of what I realize now was just a bunch of adults not having a friggin' clue how to deal with their own crap, let alone even worrying about the kids. So I got into college. I ended up in nursing. I did really well in school. I dropped my weight. I was down to the lowest I've ever been, which for me was a size 11. I carry my weight well. So even though apparently those pictures, most people don't realize that I'm 300 pounds in those pictures. But my lowest weight was like 145 pounds, but I had trouble maintaining it. But I exercised a lot. I ate well. But in that space, my spirituality was like really, really huge. And I really just seemed to have done well with it. I got rid of what I realized now were my trigger foods, and I stuck to kind of what I was doing, following this little path of like a great life. And really just started to enjoy my life. And then I had an opportunity. I say that I'm enjoying my life, but I will tell you, I've been suicidal since I'm 12. Every day, I woke up waiting for the day to end. Even when I was happy back then, they were really fleeting moments of, I was enjoying moments, but I was still, if I hit a problem or something happened, it was a catastrophe. The car didn't start, my world was ending, and I needed to die. And that's really how I spent my life. So even though I'm doing all these things, because the next thing I did is I lived in Hawaii for a year. How cool is that, right? And I lived in California for a year after that. And that was when I was that close for actually crashing my car into a wall, when I picked up a phone and found a therapist. And that was 20 years ago. So, you know, I'm living this, like, successful life. People don't know what's going on in my life. Very few people ever knew that that's where my headspace was, because what I showed and what I performed for the world was exactly what I thought that they needed for me to see, so that they would like me and I would always have people around me. But I knew if they really got to know me, they wouldn't like me. If they got to know the real me, they would be disgusted, because I was disgusted with who I was. And so my journey at that point was interesting. Thank God I found therapy, because at least I stopped that activity of finally crashing into a wall. But I still, and then it was my 20-year journey of trying of self-discovery of like what's going on and why am I here. It's interesting. What actually saved me was a defect. And it was the defect of character of, I am omnipotent and so important that my family couldn't function if I wasn't here. Because I cooked and I cleaned. I'm 6,000 miles away and I'm still thinking like they couldn't function if I wasn't around. Well, thank God I felt that way. And that was a defect that now I know why. I look back as I searched backwards, I looked at my defects to see really what were they doing for me. Well, at that point it helped me. It was something that was a coping mechanism that kept me here on this earth. And getting ready to find OA one day. So there I've still continued to be miserable. Notice I mentioned no relationships in here, because there weren't any, because I didn't date. Because why would anybody date a short, fat girl? A short, fat, ugly girl. And that was really how I felt about myself. I still struggle with not thinking like that. But my brother that's 11 months younger than me, who I saw as a peer, someone who could give me kind of like real, and he would tell me I was short, fat, and ugly. So I heard it. I believed it. Never heard anything to the contrary, except for, you have such a pretty face. Well, you know, except for the circles under my eyes and the this and the that and the this. So I could really just keep going on about my self-image was so poor. And then I left nursing and I got this like really awesome job where I'm traveling all over the United States, having this fantastic place. I start dating some guy finally in Washington State. And then he dumps me like a year later. And I said it was all set up. I had done it already. I made sure that I kind of threw out enough stuff like, oh, this is just for fun. This is da 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 da. So I sabotaged it. And don't even know where it would have went had I not done that. But it's what I put out there for me to always be on the ready. Well, I wasn't ready when he let me go. And then I came home, and about a month after that, my sister-in-law decided she didn't like me anymore and weren't going to talk to me. And along went that with my brother. And then I was traveling about 80% of my time. So they were having family functions every time I would go away. So there was a lot of this, you know, and then of course everybody was telling me, no, 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 it's all in your imagination. So I did get confirmation on that, but it just fed into exactly what I wanted it to feed into. I'm short, fat, and ugly, nobody loves me, see somebody got to get to know me, and they all hate me. Well, 2 years later, my brother dies at 31. And then 2 years after that, my father dies. 2 years after that, my grandmother dies. A year after that, one of my best friends dies. And now my mother's really sick with diabetes and on her last, God bless her, took her 2 years. But sorry, that's a joke between she and I guess I should be sensitive when I say that out loud. We're always teasing her. But so by the time I got to the end of that, I didn't want to make friends. I didn't even want the friends I had. Like, I was afraid to have anybody in my life because everybody was leaving me. And I will tell you, I have a trail of friends. I have friends that I've had for 35 years. I have people, acquaintances that I just have friends. It's part of who I am. But I couldn't see any of them. I couldn't see that they were there and that they liked me and that I was part of this universe. I was so, so self-consumed with how miserable my life was and how I lived this 99% 1% rule. 1% is what I focus on. So if 99% is good, I am focused on the 1% that's not. So I walk into a room tonight, and if I get a hello and a hug from every single person but one of you, I would have. Now I don't actually even care. nothing personal, but you know, I would focus on this one individual. Never even putting any thought that they might just be where they are because God knows what happened to them that day. But it was all about me, and I was going to be determined to make them like me. Everybody in the world thinks I'm an extrovert, which really entertains me because, my God, I would like to stay under my covers as a usual thing. Until I get to know you, then it's all bets off. But I was always so worried about people liking me that that compensation for that came in. And I'm just somebody who's I'm a caregiver from birth. I've been doing it forever. So those are the things that get me out of my shell, that help me to stand, you know, or sit in front of a group of people. And I like talking, so it's another good thing. But it was really like I would work a room. So nobody knew. The girl that's working the room is the one that couldn't wait to go home to binge, to hopefully die. I would stay home weekends. I was very busy Monday through Friday. That was my thing. Go out to work go out after work, have fun, whatever it was. And the weekends I would hole up and I would just disappear off the face of the earth. And then after my mom passed away, it's funny. I've been with a really great therapist for a period of time and she spent years, week after week. Have you thought about OA? Have you thought about OA? She's a woman who had been working with 12-step programs for years. Of course, she wasn't in one and she was this thin, and I don't know if that had something to do with it or not. And I had never, ever, ever heard of OA outside of her voice in all my life. And I have been in every way in pay since I'm 12 or 13 I've been going. So, because that's another thing a teenager always wants to be in. Well, now they're not so bad because there's other teenagers in them. But, you know, back then it was really just, it was really sad, and I was just really miserable, and I just can't believe I was so unhappy and so desperately sad. And the isolation that I used was tremendous. I could stay home I eventually was in senior management in a corporation. So again, success, I own my own home, have two cars, traveled all over the place. I have this like great life, and all I want to do is die. And I can't stop eating. I can't believe I still can't stop eating. And, you know, my weight really shot up through those years. And by the time my mom died is when I was, I'm sure I was over 300 pounds. I don't know what I was because I wouldn't get on a scale. And I actually decided to buy every book on the OA website so that I could work it myself. So I spent 2 years with the book. I am extremely spiritual, have been since I'm young. So I figured, what the heck? I got this awesome God. He loves me. We got this great, great dialogue going on. He gives me whatever, you know, I need because I don't worry about jobs. I don't worry about money. Never worried about those things. But I never actually thought to turn over food or to turn over outcomes. Just didn't think about that. I had a schedule of when I was dying. So the first scheduled death was at 32. My girlfriend held her breath, by the way. I didn't find this out till later. She was like holding her breath when I turned 32, hoping I would make it to 33, because I didn't realize she used to say it. Then my next mark was 40, and then my next mark after that was going to be 50, and there was no way I was ever living after 55. I had an out plan, and that was just how I was living my life. So I never, ever, ever, ever considered a future since I'm a small kid. Never thought about it. Now, it's another reason I probably never created relationships because, you know, friends were cool. They showed up. But dating, that was like a forever thing. And so it's just really interesting that I just had no concept to look past today. And I was obviously stuck in my past and just afraid of being wrong and making a mistake. It's funny. I am a perfectionist. I just still don't believe it. And the reason I don't believe it is because I don't strive for things to be perfect, because that's unrealistic. Nothing's perfect. I just happen to have really, really high standards that I can't meet those either. So while I don't, so it's like I can't think I'm a perfectionist, so I get caught in this whole constantly trying to make something better. And I'm constantly doing self-work for me. But my goal for doing all this work on myself was because one day I was going to figure it out and I was going to understand why I'm such a jerk, why I'm so ugly, why I'm so short, why I'm so fat, and why nobody will love me. I am going to figure it out. And when I figure it out, like something's going to happen. So every time I'd find another of my, what I realize now are defects, I would work hard on it. So I've made some really amazing changes. I am not the nightmare I was when I was a teenager. I'm not the same. I started to shift my management style because I used to manage by, you know, whip. And then eventually I learned to manage by support and all this other good stuff. So I have a lot of that fortunate piece around me. But then now I'm working this program hard with my books and God. And I remember, and I can still visually see it in my face, the word fellowship and thinking, really? What's fellowship got to do with anything? I don't understand it. Who needs people? So I got God. So I've already moved on. I'm way past you guys. That fellowship, because I don't even need that. So needless to say, I lost 49 pounds and kept it off for about a year until a Christmas Eve when I got to eat my favorite food, and which I bypassed the year before. And I ate it, and then I gained 25 or 27 pounds within 6 months. And I had a 5-day binge fest. And at that point, I think I knew I was going to go into a program because I was eating foods I had never in my life eaten before that I didn't even consider eating. I was binging on foods. I was like, what's going on? But my brother that passed away on Memorial Day. So that's always been a very difficult weekend. And by the way, they all passed away somewhere between March and Memorial Day. So I tend to, the spring is not as so springy for me as it used to be. Actually, it is now. But anyway, I spend 5 days. I think I finally had to sneak out to the store at least twice. And by the way, I put these on to hide behind. Didn't want to put makeup on, so I put my glasses on so that they wouldn't know who I was. Meanwhile, so I'm buying all this other crap on the conveyor belt. So I showed up at my first meeting in June about three and a half years ago, and I heard two people speak, and I heard they had weight loss, and I heard 15 years and 17 years. And I thought, oh my God, you can lose this and not gain it back? It's possible? And then I started to hear people speaking, and I had hope. It was the first time in my life I can recall having any level of hope. And that hope was, this could be different for me. This could actually work. Because I'd never heard that in a weigh-in pay. I've never seen that in a weigh-in pay. No matter who they were, the lifetime members never really made it lifetime. So, but here I'm seeing this, and then I'm hearing stuff that I'm liking. So now I'm kind of getting the fellowship thing, right? So I went on a two-week vacation, which is, if you see the pictures, there's a button in there. And that is me on that vacation. I am sitting on the Rhine in Germany, after coming back from a Christmas market, drinking champagne, spending this time with family, right? If you look at my eyes, they're dead. I'm miserable. I'm just so sad and so disgusted. And I'm thinking now, like, I had all this great stuff, and I actually couldn't see it. So by September of that year, I found myself a sponsor, which, by the way, I tripped on because I was asking this girl that I finally, like, somebody in there I could speak to. She seemed nice. She was working a program, and I was like, how do you find a sponsor? And she said, well, you know, my sponsor just told me it was time for me to start sponsoring. So, voila. Like, crap. I didn't want a sponsor. I was going on vacation that week. So I went on vacation. I called her every day. I put a food plan together, and I was abstinent on vacation with eating buddies. I don't know how the heck that happened, but it did. And she dove me right into the big book and right into step 1, 2, and 3. And we spent some time there, and it was kind of neat. Her sponsor at the time is of the actual lineage of Bill W. So it was kind of cool. It just felt like even more like I was in touch with this whole 12-step thing. And she gave me all these little neat notes that I have in my big book. And it was just really the start for me to realize that, like, all that work I've been doing on myself was helpful, and all the things I learned about eating was helpful, but that there was really, and my spirituality was helpful, but it wasn't until I kind of put it all together and then let it go was when things were starting to change for me, when I finally realized I am actually not in control. I think my first 3 months in this program, I believed step one was about eating. I think after maybe 6 months in the program, I believe step one is about everything. So when I read step one, I'm powerless over everything, every single thing. I got nothing. And this is a control freak beyond control freaks, because, heck, I was rearing a family at the age of, 10. So so crazy. But it really did start to change. And then my sponsor said to me, I'm only going to be able to give you one day a week. And I've got all this other stuff going on, and I'm thinking, one day a week's not going to work for me. One, I like to talk. Two, I just need that connection. So then I started to go into panic mode, and I started looking for a sponsor. Because I knew that at that point, that's what I needed. And I did. I went to meetings. I was all over the place. I was going to meetings in North Jersey, I actually didn't hit South Jersey. I think I just did a lot of around my, more North Jersey and Central Jersey. And then I went to Unity Day, and I asked like 6 people, and everybody was like, no, I'm sorry, I'm full. Now I'm like devastated. I don't even know what to do. I cannot believe no one will sponsor me, and all I want to do is get better. And so I'm with a couple of my friends, and then they finally said, at the end they said, oh, will all sponsors stand up? So, I don't know how many people stand up. It was really a huge room full of people stood up. And then they asked anybody who was available to stay standing. And I turned around, and there were still a bunch of people. Well, I'm on overload now, and the last thing I want to do is get shot down again. So my friends finally looked. My girlfriend says, "Har," and she points over to this one over here. And but I had a laugh, because it turns out I thought she knew her. No. My friend had red hair. She pointed to the woman with the red hair. And I sat down next to her. And so sometimes I didn't even know she had what I wanted. But it was where God wanted me. And very interesting that it is. I got exactly what I needed because I found someone who is as gregarious as I am, who loves doing service like I do, who is got a program, and I found out had relapse. And that was my biggest fear, was I never wanted to gain this weight again. Because I knew, and I still know, if I ever go back to my old ways, I'm done. I won't be back. Because that's how frightening it was for me, and I knew that's where I was heading. And I could just, I'm gone. So I wanted somebody who could see the signs before I got there and would tell me when they see them. And I think in my heart I knew at that point it really had nothing to do, didn't have as much to do with the food as it had to do with the spiritual part of the program. And so, and I was, by the way, I was racing to get step four done. I couldn't wait. I was really pissed off that this girl wasn't allowing me to get my step four done because she couldn't give me time. And I wanted the step four to be done because I wanted to find all my bad things so I could fix them. And so funny that God made me wait, do it slower, and then do it right. And I sat down, and I loved step four because it made me humble. And what I got from that was, huh, I'm an asshole. Huh, I got a lot of crap that's gone on in my life. Oh my God. My brother went through the same life I did. My mother was the same life I did. All these people had the same life I had. And my new favorite word now is terminal uniqueness. And I really thought like I was the worst off in the family. By the way, I'm one of the two of the five of us that's still alive. So I don't know how worse off I am, right? Traveled all over the place, multiple continents, not even just the United States. And I'm the one with the big issue. And I was thinking the other day, I would sit for dinner at a table with four other people that were somewhere between 250 and 300 pounds. And we would all be shoveling down a meal. But I'm the one with the issue. Apparently, they were all okay. But my mother was a jerk. My father, he never could do anything wrong, so, because he's my dad. But, you know, there was just a lot of that angst. And I realize now, I grew up in a family of compulsive eaters. Oh, my God. Like, wow. So now, I realize, too, that I lost three family members to addiction. Because two of them I lost from diabetes, especially my mom, who really, there's no diabetes that runs in her family. She should not have been diabetic. But she ate substances, like, unbelievable. And then my brother, the one that passed away, was over 300 pounds and had, they don't have a specific cause of death. But contributing factors were he was over 300 pounds, he had cocaine in his system, and he had been drinking over the weekend. So it was a ticking time bomb. I don't know why my other brother's alive, because he has some similar stories, but God has left him with me, and I know why, because he was my continuing teacher. And by the way, we have a great relationship now that I just didn't realize we would ever have, and he's really awesome. And I've told him that. So, something I never really told him for most of my life. So, I really just had this, that was what step four gave me, was just this ability, not just to look at me, but to just look at everybody as just a human being. Like, I'm no more special, so I don't have to be perfect. And neither do they. And expectations are really dangerous. Any expectation, whether it's of myself, whether it's of somebody else, it's just dangerous. And do I never make them? No, of course I still make them. It's part of life. But once I realized I had an expectation, first I try to not have any. But then when I realize I might be having some response to it, it's really great to step back and go, oh, I had an expectation. And now I'm going to let it go. So step five was rewarding for me in the fact that I was supposed to give it to my sponsor at a retreat. She got sick. So God, again, giving me what I needed. He ended up in putting me with somebody that I did not think I'd be friends with ever, let alone dumping my step five on him. And I did. And it was a really amazing experience for both of us because it was the first time she took step five. It was the first time, obviously, I ever did one. And it really allowed me to say things and feel things that I had never even acknowledged myself, let alone to somebody else. And then I got really lucky and got to do it again when I had some time with my sponsor as well, which more stuff came out. I thought I was going to have to make like thousands of amends, which was another nice thing, is I didn't have to make as many as I thought because I was so hard on myself that that was some of the stuff that fed into just my misery and my defects. And looking at my defects, the thing that stood out for me when I was looking at those, and I'd been looking at them my whole life, so half of them I already, probably 80% of them I already knew. It wasn't until I actually saw the why behind them when it started to make sense for me. Like, oh, so that's when when I'm in that situation and that fear comes up for me, that's where I go. When I'm in this situation and this anxiety comes up, that's what I use. So it was kind of good to go back and look at, you know, what are those coping mechanisms that I had used. And some of those defects are amazing assets. And I love to tell, my favorite one is my people-pleasing. People-pleasing can be an asset because I will tell you, it's what keeps me abstinent. I do not ever want to disappoint the people that it's important, the three people I sponsor. My sponsor, my sponsor's sponsor. So I use that. I don't want to disappoint myself. I know I'm coming here to talk. I have to be abstinent. I do things on the intergroup. I might end up on region. I have to be abstinent, and I don't want to let people down. And this program can't keep continuing if I'm not. So I use my defect. I use that. I use the altar to that, which is an asset. And service comes with it. I love doing service. It gets me out of my head. It gets me out of myself. It gets me out of my house because I love to go back under the covers. The couch is my favorite place. I really had just recognized the amount of gossip I do. I have a very strong personality. I'm sure nobody noticed that, but I do. And I'm an influencer. And because I was this interesting party in the house, I'm a master manipulator. People didn't talk to each other. I didn't like it. I would fix it. So my job was that little, I was behind the scenes with everybody. 90% of the time I was trying to make it better because I didn't like all that anxiety, but heaven forbid I didn't like you because I'll give me some time and no one will like you. And I didn't realize I was doing that until I actually succeeded with this poor person that if I ever do see, I don't know that I would have to find a way. I'm still trying to figure out a way to make amends to her because I don't really want to say I made everybody hate you. And maybe I didn't, but that was definitely how I felt. And then when I realized that I was just behind the scenes gossiping. Because when I feel threatened, I am so sure I'm going to make sure everybody knows worst things about you so that I look better. And that's my go-to spot. I automatically hear myself doing it. I'm like, crap. And I've really broken away from that because I make a lot less judgments now, so I don't need to go there as often. And I really don't worry so much about what other people think. But when that threat comes in, it's a good place to go. So once I realized that, I actually scared myself, and it was in my 20s, and I realized at least I'll use my powers for good. And that was something that I actually applied to my work, and that really worked out great because that's what made me be able to create great environments for the people I worked with. What I learned in program is it is my job to fix everything, so I don't have to be involved in everything anymore. And that was a really great thing for me, was to let that go. Because there was a lot of pressure when I was trying to make everything work for everybody. It was great if I could do it. Sometimes, though, I didn't realize the ripple effect. It wasn't always what was supposed to happen, because I wasn't doing God's will, I was doing my will. So the immense part was easy for me. There wasn't a lot, and almost everybody showed up. And I had started making living amends because that's really what I needed to do. It was my behavior and my interaction with my family that really needed to change, and that kind of nasty, smart aleck, short-tempered kind of individual, and the gossiping. So a lot of that went away, and I changed that, and I've mended relationships that I didn't actually think could be mended. The only family member I have on my mom's side, I have two. I have my aunt. Well, my aunt and her husband, and my aunt has one son, and he just, 37 years later, has a baby. So this is like the first baby born in that side of the family in 37 years. My brother has no kids. I have no kids. So it's a really big, big event. Fabulous now that I have this great relationship. They don't care how long I stay. I don't mind how long I stay. So I turned that relationship around. The relationship with my brother, I turned around like, I can't to this day still imagine that we have this great relationship. He has changed somewhat, but I actually saw the human being he is because I let him finish his sentence. I actually listened to what he's saying because I'm not preparing my statement and my rebuttal. And then I start to say, oh my God, half the crap we had was him responding to me or reacting to me. And me reacting to him. So it was a dance that we did, and it was always a clash. So we've changed that, and we've been able to talk about that. God bless him that he's open enough for that kind of conversation. But we have this really cool thing. He's still who he is, and I'm not exactly who I was, but, you know, there's still some things I'm sure that irk him. But the reality is I just let it go. And I now have changed careers again. I'm opened my own business. I'm a life coach now, doing something I absolutely was born to do. I love it. I just finalized my certification in it. So here I am opening my own business, something I never thought I would do. I am dating this year, which is an interesting event, actually. It's just entertaining. I'll leave it at that. But it's a good thing. I know I'm going to live into my 90s, and I'm psyched about it. Of course, I could be dead tomorrow, but I'm okay with that too. And I my doors have been opening all over the place. My spirituality has grown through the roof. I have new people in my life that I never thought I'd have that are in this program and even outside of this program. I'm tripping on just amazingly interesting people. And I've left the baggage behind. I don't bring in the ugly people. And I say that in a way, I know it sounds judgmental, but I can't deal with the negative and the miserable and the people that want you to be miserable with them. I can't spend my time in that. And I don't have the magnet anymore. Well, I have the magnet. I just don't. I turn it off. I still have it. I have the face. People want to talk to me. And that's okay. I can really be involved with somebody in that respect to listen, but I don't need to own their stuff. And the way that I've managed to be able to do that is really solidly working 10, 11, and 12. And step 11, I love meditation. Who'd have thunk I could do meditation? But now I'm into silent meditation, and that's even cooler. So now I'm reading up on Buddhist. I went to some very interesting ceremony on Friday night. So I'm really kind of getting out of myself, but I set an intention every day. I get up, I sit at my little space. I get up in the morning now, I meditate. I always say a prayer before I do anything, and I never pick the phone up without asking God to direct the conversation. Because never, and now it's like a habit, no matter who I am, don't have to pick up on the first ring, no matter who calls me. I can wait. And even when I'm going from call to call to call, that's what I do first. So that's the intention before a phone call, because I got to tell you, if I'm not connected and I'm not listening, I got my own will going on, and my own will likes to just fix everybody. So it's really important when I sit down to do work, I light a candle, I make an intention, I meditate whenever I can, and I found this great little Vietnamese monk And he's got this great meditation. He talks about phone meditation, driving meditation, walking meditation. It's phenomenal. You can see me later. I'll give you his name if you want. But it's just, I spend a lot of time now taking out my moments for me, no matter what's going on in my life. Granted, I've created a life now that's not as stressful as it was, but that's a choice. I didn't want that stressful life. I didn't need the money I was making. I'm figuring it out as I go along, and God's providing what I need. And my higher power, some days it's the cardinals that have been flying around or the little goldfinches that visit me in the summer. Some days it's the God that I grew up with. Some days it's just the sun shining on my face. So I've really created the higher power that supports and loves me. And my life is amazing, and I'm living promises that I never thought I have. And I will tell you, I am looking forward to my future. And I never was. So that's it. Thank you for letting me share. I think I spoke for 5 minutes.